Welcome to the Mission Critical Leadership Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Hebert, creator of the Mission Critical Coaching System, where we take a unique, holistically based approach to your personal growth. We examine all aspects of your life and leadership and engage your heart and mind to unlock your full potential so you can be, do, and have it all. Coming up on this episode, we talk about creating compounding wins as an emotionally intelligent leader, and I'll give you three things that you can do to grow your emotional intelligence. Let's dive in. Welcome back to the show, everybody. I am Justin Hebert, and I am so thrilled to have you join me on episode 11 of the Mission Critical Leadership Podcast. And we are all about coaching and developing you and your staff and your team to be mission critical leaders. Now, sometimes I get asked, well, Justin, what is a mission critical leader? I define it this way. The mission critical leader is the person that we can look at and know they have a lot riding on them. Their success fosters and fuels success for others. And a lot of times in the work that I do, that means that I work with business leaders, business executives, business owners, but that's not the primary outworking. The mission critical leader is somebody who knows that their success creates and results in success for others. And so maybe you're the stay-at-home parent, and your success and your health and your integrity and your growth ties the entire house together. And you could look at and say, if I'm healthy, things go well. And when I'm disengaged or I check out, we really struggle. Whatever it is, whatever the capacity is, mission critical leaders know that their influence happens in several areas of life, and their desire to be healthy and create a system so that they can continue to grow and influence other people towards health is who we are aiming for. So if that is you, I'm so thankful that you have joined us today. I hope that you get something of wisdom and practical application and grow today as an emotionally intelligent leader. That's what we have focused on the last couple of weeks on the podcast. We're going to talk about it again next week as we wrap up the month of May. Four parts on what it means to be an emotionally intelligent leader. So, if you haven't subscribed yet, please do so. Please leave us a five-star review. Make sure you share this with other people. Go back, catch the rest in this series. Catch all of our previous episodes. Get caught up. Get up to date on what it means to be a mission-critical leader. How do we lead well? Now, I was thinking about this, and, you know, in the context of this, really what sparked this one, I'm part of a leadership catalyst engine for my city where I live. And this program, it's been going on for years, for decades actually, is designed to collaborate and foster innovation across a large and diverse group of people. And so they take 32 applicants every year and expose them to different topics, to different issues, to different leaders trying to tackle those issues in the local community, pair them up into the groups and say, now with this newfound information, how are you going to go be a leader? It's a fantastic program. Started it in January, so we're about halfway through, not quite halfway through. Absolutely love it. Great experience. And we had one of our large group meetings here recently, just a week ago. And I was listening to one of their presenters talk about, broadly the theme, the idea for the day was arts and culture in our city. What are the things that are going on that contribute and facilitate to understanding the culture of the city that we live, and the artwork and the decor and the music and the theatrics, and can we make this a place where people start to experience something outside of the normal everyday hustle and bustle, but go to celebrate life and beauty in its many forms. And so we're doing that, and we're listening to a gentleman, and he gave me one of the points that I want to talk about today through really just a profound quote. And so we're going to use him, but this big, broad idea of emotional intelligence matters because it is probably the single greatest derailing activity a leader can do is to be emotionally unintelligent. That an emotionally unwise and emotionally unaware leader wreaks havoc, not just on themselves, but on everything that they touch. And we've talked about that before at length in some of the previous podcasts. And so today what I want to do is give you 3 points and 3 directions to help foster and create this idea of what I call the compounding wins. Right? How is it that it's not just that you win, but you create the system for others to win, right? That's this idea behind the mission critical leader. When you win, you foster, you create the environment for other people to win. So I want to give you 3 points today directly related to emotional intelligence and creating compounding wins. With that, let's get going. Point number one, you cannot lead out of an emotional deficit. You cannot lead out of an emotional deficit. And years ago, I was reading a book. I actually used this book in one of the college courses that I teach when we talk about leadership development. What does it mean to be an emotionally intelligent leader? Peter Scazzaro wrote a book a number of years ago called The Emotionally Healthy Leader, right? And he talks about this idea of what does it mean to live out of an abundance, emotional intelligence abundance, that I am deeply aware of what is going on in my heart, in my head, in my brain, in my soul, that I am deeply in tune to the emotions that I am feeling and experiencing, and I can use that in a positive, a constructive way to help those around me. And so Peter, in his book, uses this idea of an iceberg, that maybe the emotions we see or initially on our journey, the emotions that we're aware of, are just like the tip of that iceberg above the surface. We might see and know and experience those, but beneath that, there's this whole greater depth. In fact, by far the greater mass of the iceberg lives below the surface. And so what we see above the surface is really just a small portion of what's going on underneath. So to be aware that if I am expressing these things on the outwork, on above the surface of my life, am I aware of what's going on underneath it? And what depths have I actually spent diving into my own emotional understanding, perspective, bias, feelings, direction, discomfort? And how do I begin to become not just aware of those, but then foster those and become intimate with those and express those in meaningful and healthy ways? And so that's really a lot of what his book talks about. It's a fantastic book, but like I said, he talks about this abundance, right? And if you want to lead out of an emotional abundance, then that means that the opposite of that is leading out of an emotional deficit. And that's that first point. You can't lead out of an emotional deficit. In fact, Scazzaro in his book says this: the emotionally unhealthy leader is someone who operates in a continuous state of emotional and spiritual deficit, lacking emotional maturity. The emotionally unhealthy leader is someone who operates in a continuous state of emotional and spiritual deficit, lacking emotional maturity. Now, one of his points, one of the things that I think he does really well, is talk about that he highlights that continuous state of emotional and spiritual deficit. That's an issue. And if you look at the research surrounding burnout, which is my background, which is my passion, where we're trying to fight burnout in these mission critical leaders, burnout happens in that continuous state of emotional and spiritual deficit. But if you look at when people start to suffer burnout, it's typically after a big crisis or that calm before the next crisis. And unhealthy leaders begin to live for that crisis. That's when they feel alive. I'm needed. I'm useful. There's chaos around me and everybody loves me because I'm the one that can help them navigate the chaos. Unhealthy leaders thrive in that chaos. And if they don't get it, they become bored and they can tend to generate chaos because they need that sense of stability or that sense of usefulness to feel like they belong and matter within any given organization, a family unit, a business, a nonprofit, whatever. Unhealthy leaders crave that chaos because that's where they feel like they're needed. But that is precisely what leads to overwhelm. That's what leads to burnout. That's what leads to emotional unintelligence and that emotional crash, that we navigate this crisis, we've all done well, but now I am just so darn exhausted that I can't even hardly get out of bed in the morning. And that's when we start to suffer. On that point, I don't think it's at all coincidental that for pastors, which is where my background is, working with pastors, their number one time for suicide is Saturday night, because the prospect of another Sunday, which is a long, hard day for all pastors, is so overwhelming that Saturday night is when pastors are most at risk for suicide. Similar to that, business people, their biggest time and potential risk for suicide is Sunday night, because the prospect of going to a job that they hate or don't want to be around anymore, more business professionals kill themselves on Sunday night than any other night of the week. And building off of that, so if the greatest risk for pastors of suicide is Saturday night, the greatest risk of them transgressing moral and personal boundaries, whether that's through financial embezzlement or inappropriate relationships or infidelity or whatever it is Monday. As a pastor, those are the things that become troubling. Saturday night, you're at risk for suicide because Sunday feels so daunting. Monday, you're at risk for personal moral failure because you're so exhausted from Sunday that you leave yourself vulnerable to risk. If you are not aware of those pressures, if you're not aware of what's going on inside you, if you're not able to name those emotions, that really both of those problems stem from not having cultivated a deep enough personal, emotional, and spiritual intelligence to be aware of the drain that those sorts of days place on you. The emotionally unhealthy leader is someone who operates in a continuous state of emotional, spiritual deficit. So if your life is Sunday, let's use that pastor example. Sunday is this high energy, full on, super charismatic, upfront personality profile style, and I leave Sunday night exhausted, and Monday I commit some sort of personal moral failure, and I spend Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday kind of recovering from that. Then Saturday comes and I have not fully geared up for Sunday again, like it's this net negative, right? Sunday depletes me. Monday I'm empty. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I gradually rebuild, but I just kind of get back to that plateau of zero. And then Saturday happens and I start to crest down a little bit. And then Sunday there's that spike and that ultimate crash. Monday I'm at the bottom. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. This continual cycle, this continuous state of deficit is what leads to emotional, spiritual, personal, financial, mental, physical overwhelm. And in that context, emotionally unintelligent leaders harm themselves and others quite easily and quite readily. So you cannot lead out of an emotional deficit. To counter that, you must practice that abundance. And that is part of what we've talked about in past episodes. What does it mean to name your emotions, to sit with those emotions, to not judge them as good or bad, but just allow them to be? I am angry. That means there's injustice somewhere. How do I let that anger stir up a positive, righteous action towards positive engagement with the world rather than embitterment and negativity and violence? I'm sad. That means a personal boundary has been transgressed. How do I sit with that sadness? How do I feel that I am bereaved at a sense of loss and allow myself to appropriately mourn that instead of trying to mask it with drugs or alcohol or other stimulants? Whatever it is, can you cultivate deep inside your bones an emotional awareness well below the surface? Not just those surface level emotions, not just the tip of the iceberg that you let everybody see, but those deep inside moments and emotions, those deeper currents of your soul that continue to matter long into the future. How do you guide and shepherd those? You can't do it out of a state of a deficit. If you're always trying to continually replace to get back to that net negative zero and never actually crossing over that threshold into the positive, you will never get ahead as a leader. If you cannot name and sit with and embrace and identify and participate in your emotions, you will never have influence as a leader. You must be able to control those emotions. That is foundation, fundamental, formula 101 for emotional intelligence. What is your breadth and depth of understanding of your emotions, and how do you participate in those without judgment, without shame, without fear, and instead use and harness that energy for creative, positive, the generative of good ideas into the world. Don't lead out of an emotional deficit. Lead out of the abundance of sitting with those emotions, working through them, identifying them, and using their positive aspects to bless the world and those around you. Point number two, is that you need to start celebrating deep wins. Now, this is where I am indebted to our speaker this last week as part of this citywide leadership catalyst. He said this. Gentleman's name was Art, provided this perspective. The greatest leaders have no victims. The best victories make no losers. The greatest leaders have no victims. The best victories make no losers. That's the power of these compounding wins. When you lead people, how easy is it to track who wins and who loses? I was doing some work in an organization recently, and several people could identify one department that appeared to be the favorite in the organization based on education or experience or location or personal relationships. They maybe couldn't quite identify what the triggering factor was, but everybody knew who the favorites were in the company. They would always win. Management, leadership, directors, top personnel, executives always seemed to take this department side, whether the evidence supported it or not. It was pretty easy to track winners and losers. What about where you lead? The greatest leaders have no victims. Could you look back at your leadership personality profile? Could you look back at those with whom you've had influence? Could you look back at those that have been entrusted to your care and identify who you made better and who you made bitter? Who continued to grow as a result of your influence and who stagnated and declined? The best victories make no losers. What does it look like in your organization to create a space where everybody wins something? I'm not talking like everybody gets a participation trophy. I mean, we in the midst of conflict want to instantly assume somebody has to win and somebody has to lose. Part of our initial understanding of conflict is that if I'm going to win, then you have to lose, and that's the only way that this works. We have fundamentally misunderstood conflict because we assume it has to be about winning and losing. Listen to the metaphors that we use when we talk about conflict. We assume it's like war, right? We have to take no prisoners. We have to show no mercy. We have to silence the opposition. Whatever it is, the casual lingo that we use is a detriment and a disservice to our own growth because we assume you and I don't agree. That means I have to show you how much better I am. You have to lose and I have to win. That's cheap. That's ignorant. That's unhelpful. That's counterproductive ways of handling and viewing and managing conflict. Instead, can you sit with your emotional capacity, sit with that depth of your emotions and say, I'm feeling this, the other person is feeling this, what does that look like to work together and create a space for us both to win? Are we really at odds? There might be situations where you are genuinely at odds and somebody has to get their way or get their perspective or get their point, and somebody may have to concede. But that is 5% of the conflicts we're in. 95% can be fostered collaboratively, productively, and positively creating a space where everybody wins. Now, winning does not mean you get everything you want, everything you ask for. Winning means you feel heard, you feel valued, you feel respected, you feel treated with care, you feel like you belong, and you feel like your points were taken seriously, and you were able to contribute to the final product, the final discussion, the final movement of the group. You see, that's what good, healthy conflict looks like. And we see that personally in our personal relationships all of the time. If I want to go to New York and see a show on Broadway, and my wife wants to go to Chicago and catch a show there, we could compromise and find a third city and go catch a show there. We could find a creative outworking and solution to the problem. If I want to go to the beach and she wants to go to the mountains, then maybe we go to the mountains for Thanksgiving and the beach for Christmas. Or we find a new location. We don't go to either of those, and instead we find a cabin getaway in the desert. There are positive and constructive ways all around us that in our everyday scenarios, we can figure out how to do the workaround. Going out to eat. She wants this. I want this. Can we find something that honors us both? That's a situation where we don't leave a victim. We don't disrespect. We don't dishonor. We don't demean anybody. We also don't make a loser. I win. I got my way. You can suck it up. Be better. I'm clearly the best. The greatest leaders have no victims. The best victories make no losers. Your emotional intelligence is directly tied to your ability to foster that collaborative, cohesive environment where no victim is left behind and no loser is made through actions. And you can foster that and celebrate that through good emotional intelligence. And finally, my third point today is that good emotionally intelligent leaders foster open dialogue and communication. I was sitting with an executive team a couple of days ago, and an ex-employee was mentioned. And someone said, hey, I liked this individual when they were here. What would you think about, you know, seeing if they're interested in coming back? And one individual had a very negative response towards that idea. I don't like this person. I wouldn't want them back. I want nothing to do with them. Their first day here is my last day. And people just kind of sat with that and allowed that person to express their feelings without degrading or demeaning them, and just take note of there seems to be some hostility here. And we talked about it a little bit, but largely just kind of let that person begin to process their emotions. And after the meeting, a couple hours later, got an email from that individual, and they said, I was out of line, I overspoke, I regret the words that I used, I want to repent of that, I want to ask for your forgiveness, I want to reconcile and make this right, I realize what I said is wrong. And within seconds, this person got emails back from the rest of the team thanking them and accepting their apology and working towards better reconciliation and better understanding and better space to continue that dialogue. You see, a negative culture would have shut that down. We would have criticized that person or critiqued that person or bad-talked behind their back, and none of that went on. Instead, we allowed open dialogue to continue to happen. In the moment that leadership team was able to sit with those negative emotions and just allow that person space to try to navigate what was going on inside of them. And later, as they gained some of that clarity, they were able to circle back to that conversation and take the appropriate steps to make sure that everybody was heard and reconciled and forgiven, and they were able to process that together as a group in a really healthy and beautiful way. Emotionally intelligent leaders foster that open dialogue. We don't have to shut down emotions. As we mentioned on last week's podcast, there are no such thing as negative emotions. It is just what we choose to do with them. that makes emotions positive or negative. And this group was able to sit with that person's emotions and just say, there's clearly something going on here. They're feeling hurt. They need to express themselves. Can we give them space to do that? We can. And then as they were able to process that and gain that greater depth and understanding on themselves and able to more articulately share what really the issue was, this group was able to rally around that individual and provide positive hope and direction for continued growth. And what a beautiful example of emotional intelligence across a team. And we're going to talk specifically about team dynamics and emotional intelligence next week. But that team worked really well together to say, here's the future direction of where we need to go and how we need to handle these situations. So foster open dialogue and communication. So those are three things that you can do as a leader to not just grow your emotional intelligence, but help begin to foster and bring other people into their own degrees of emotional intelligence. First, never work from a deficit. Work on the abundance. Sit down, journal, meditate, write, reflect, probe those depths with a coach, with a mentor, in a trusted group, among friends, but figure out how to avoid that trap of emotional deficiency, of spiritual deficiency, and instead start to work out of the abundance by understanding not just surface-level emotions, but everything that goes underneath it. Second, make sure that you celebrate those deep wins. Take no victims, create no losers. Finally, foster open dialogue and communication without judgment. Give people space to process those difficult emotions, because they're not positive or negative, and allow them to express them in appropriate and healthy ways that foster and continue group conversation, group dialogue, group transformation forward. We're going to spend next week diving into what that looks like in your team. So come back, make sure you're subscribed so you know when that next episode releases, and I will see you on the next episode.